Welcome to episode 44 of Practical Defense, selecting a martial arts school for your child. Welcome to the Practical Defense Podcast, where you'll learn practical approaches to staying safe in our increasingly dangerous urban environments. I'm your host, Alex Eddix. This week, our topic is things that you should consider when selecting a martial arts school for your child. But first, we have our weekly tip from Kristen at kristensguide.com. Phone systems work differently in different countries. In many countries, phone systems are very similar, but in some other countries, you may still need to call a special number or speak to an operator before making an international call. So when you travel outside of your native country, make sure that you know, before you leave, how to call back to your home country using mobile phones and landlines. And of course, don't forget to learn the emergency numbers for any country that you visit. I have a few housekeeping notes before we move on to our main topic. I can't believe this, but I forgot to mention last week that my new column for Taekwondo Times magazine went online. I'll include a link in the show notes, but you can find it at the taekwondotimes.com website in the online columns area. My column is called Raising Awareness, and a new article will go up the first week of every month, so stop by and check it out. I'm also working on a couple of other really cool projects right now that I think everyone will be interested in, but I'm not certain I can talk about them yet. I'll know and next time for next week's episode, and hopefully I'll be able to talk about it then. But for now, I'll just have to leave you in suspense. All right, we'll be right back with our discussion of selecting a martial arts school for your child. The most common question I receive is, what martial art should I train in? That's usually quickly followed by, what do you think about Krav Maga? For the answers to those questions, I'm going to refer everyone back to episode 22, where I go over some things you should think about when choosing a program for yourself. But selecting a martial arts program for your child is entirely different than choosing one for an adult. First off, the style of martial art means almost nothing for children. To them, it's all punching and kicking and rolling around on the ground and having fun. They aren't going to grasp any of the philosophies in any meaningful way. Now, they may be able to regurgitate it during belt tests, but they won't be able to internalize it and understand the true meaning behind it. And that's fine, you know? I mean, they're just kids. You know, in fact, most adults I train with don't fully grasp the material either. The Kenpo Grandmaster I train with now, Mohammed Tabatabai, told me just this week in one of our after-class discussions that 90% of the people want to do martial arts, but only 10% want to be a martial artist. For children, the most important element is the instructor. If your child isn't comfortable with the instructor or the instructor can't communicate with your child, it's not going to work. Plain and simple. This is where the free trial lessons come into play. Pay close attention to their interaction and talk to your child afterwards. You have to go in for at least 2 free lessons. Your child's mood on any particular day can affect the interaction as much as anything else, and you need to see as many examples as possible. You know, how does the instructor act when your child is not understanding the instructions or just not being cooperative? Also, if your child is young, and I'm talking about, 4 or 5 years old, he or she just might not be ready for classes yet. And this happened to one of my nephews. I trained under Grandmaster Tabatabai as a child, and both my sisters trained under him as well. And now my sister's kids and her husband also train under him. But the youngest son of my sister, whose family who trains with Grandmaster Tabatabai, just wasn't ready when he turned 4. I mean, he had known him his entire life. And I'm talking about he was going to the studio several times a week before he was even born. My sister was pregnant and his older brother had already started training, so he kind of went along for the ride. He would even crawl and eventually run out onto the mats and play with the kids after the classes. But when it came time for him to stand in front of the Grandmaster and learn, he just couldn't. I can't tell you how shocked we all were. So they waited a few months and tried again, and then everything was fine. So if you take your child around to a few places and none of them seem right, perhaps it isn't time to start him or her. You know, wait a few months and then try it again. Now, other things you should look at the instructor are, how does the instructor make you feel? Does the instructor creep you out? How does the instructor treat the students? And how do the students treat the instructor? And how do the students treat the facility? These can all be clues on the type of instruction that are totally separate from the style. The exact same style of martial art and the exact same material can be presented in very different ways. The next most common question I receive about children in martial arts is, when do I start my child in martial arts? I don't think you can start too early, but it really depends upon your child. Most schools won't take a child under 4, but I have seen them take some as young as 3. Before then, children just don't have the physical coordination or ability to concentrate long enough to make it through an entire class. Only you can best judge your child's abilities and concentration level. You also want to look at the children's curriculum of the studios that you're considering. Do they even have a printed curriculum? Is it just a martial arts punching and kicking, or do they go over real-world scenarios like crossing the street, not chasing balls into the street, not getting into a car with anyone, how to deal with bullies, you know, beyond popping them in the nose, and for that matter, when is it okay to hit someone and when is it not? These types of questions will uncover if the program is just a stripped-down version of the adult classes, or if it's something designed specifically for children. Also, do they have female instructors for the children's classes? I found this to be a fascinating question. You know, why would it even matter? Well, for some, it's really important. I know a few mothers that look specifically for female black belt instructors for their daughters. The reason is they wanted to have a strong female role model for their girls. They wanted their daughters to see a woman in front of the class demonstrating defensive moves and teaching physical attacks rather than the stereotypical male role model. I don't have an opinion either way, but it has come up and therefore should be something to consider. And again, it's always about your choice and your personal preference. The next two items I want to cover are probably going to be impossible to find. But that doesn't mean that they aren't important or that they shouldn't exist or that you shouldn't ask. It's just that they rarely exist. Are the instructors certified in CPR and first aid? Have the children's instructors successfully completed a criminal background check and fingerprinting? Those are things that we never see in a martial arts school. But why not? We demand that our workers in our daycare centers have them. We demand that all teachers have them. Workers and even volunteers in any community center that works with kids must have them. School coaches, even club coaches, must have them. When I was in college, I worked as a grammar school and middle school basketball referee, and I had to pass a criminal background check and fingerprinting. So why not martial arts studios? So let's look at the first one. CPR and first aid. My personal opinion is that it is negligent to not have someone on site without CPR and first aid certification. Now think about what you do during martial arts class. Kicking and punching and falling down and rolling around and sparring. It's a very physical activity that relies on the skill and coordination of both people, you and your partner. Think about all the odd positions we place ourselves in during class that if someone accidentally messes up, that can really hurt you. Is the instructor trained and prepared to appropriately respond to the situation? That's something you need to ask. Now, I have personally witnessed a situation where we had to call an ambulance to the studio because someone was injured. And this happened when I studied Hapkido. I walked into the studio and a woman was curled up on the warm-up mat in an odd position. She was alone, and there was a class going on in the other room, so my first thought was that she was doing some sort of odd stretch. But something wasn't sitting right with me, so I paused for a moment to watch her. She was face down with her knees pulled up to her chest and her arms out in front of her. It was sort of like a modified cat stretch. Then I heard her whimper. So my years of lifeguard training kicked in, and I called out into her in a clear, loud voice, "Do you need assistance?" And then I heard a whisper of yes. So I went out on the mat and checked her without moving her or touching her. She was doubled over in an extreme pain. I then went straight to the office and asked the school manager to call 911. Then I immediately returned to her and held her hand and asked her how I could make her more comfortable and then reassured her until the ambulance arrived. The manager joined us on the mats after the call and held her other hand. Now, it was my first aid training that told me not to try to move her. Something big was going on, and it was not my place to try and be a hero or try to fix her or try to figure out what was going on. That's not first aid. First aid is about stabilization and preventing additional damage until trained medical professionals can take over. We heard the sirens in 3 minutes, and in 2 minutes after that, the EMTs walked through the front door. Later, I learned that she had been in the class and they were working on their rolls and falls. She did something that hurt her belly, so she excused herself from the class and went to the warm-up area to stretch and catch her breath. The pain worsened until she was forced to curl up, which is when I walked in. At the hospital, they determined that she had pinched a nerve in her intestine or twisted her intestine during one of the exercises. It had righted itself by the time she reached the hospital, but the extreme pain lingered for several hours. She fully recovered and was back in class about 2 weeks later. The most injuries I've seen in martial arts have been at tournaments, especially at the black belt ranks where light head contact is allowed. You know, at every other tournament, even as a child, we would see people knocked unconscious, splayed out on the floor. Instructors at martial arts schools need to have CPR and first aid training to understand and know how to handle those types of situations. Now, switching over to background checks, why aren't martial arts schools required to have background checks to teach children? And there are a couple of reasons why this came to be. First, at least in the U.S., martial arts schools are not a regulated industry. There are no city regulations that govern how a martial arts school is run. There are no inspections the way that you would have with, say, a restaurant or a daycare center. In many cities, you aren't even required to have a business license to operate a martial arts school. The second reason is the way that instructors happen. Now, I say happen because there's a process that makes you an instructor rather than a traditional job application. And the process normally goes something like this. You, as an adult, sign up for martial arts classes. As you advance to the higher ranks, part of your curriculum requirement is to teach the lower ranks and the kids' classes. Then, as a black belt, it's expected and again, sometimes required, to teach all ranks and the kids' classes to continue your belt advancement. This is part of the tradition. The higher ranks help out the master by teaching the bulk of the classes. And in a large school that's been around for a long time, the grandmaster teaches only on special occasions and spends most of his or her time running the business or doing seminars. This required teaching also prepares the black belts to run their own schools. I mean, after all, the only requirement to throw up your shingle and start your own martial arts school is a black belt. There is some safety in that the school's master gets to know the students over time, and the weirdos can be cut from the program and kept away from the children. However, how well do we really know the other students in the class? Do you hang out outside of the classroom? Have you ever been over to dinner at their house? Do your families go camping together? You know, sure, in a few cases, you build some strong friendships outside of the studio, but what about the other 20 people? Most of the time, you can't pick a pedophile out of a lineup. They look just like everybody else. That's why background checks and fingerprinting should be required of everyone. Background checks and fingerprinting is not that expensive, and there are plenty of companies that offer the service. It costs from anywhere from $20 to $50 per run. In the U.S., a person must sign a waiver to allow the background check. And you know, and I can see someone being offended or concerned about this, especially coming from a martial arts school where they train. You know, it might go something like this. So, I need to have a background and a fingerprint check before you'll let me teach the kids, but I need to teach the kids class to get my brown belt, right? The simple answer is yes. Background checks are common these days and really not a big deal. For example, I'm a writer. I generate most of my income from writing technical documentation, training, and education materials for businesses. I haven't taken on a project or contract since 1991 without the company first doing a background check on me. Now, this is both criminal and financial. It only makes sense from their perspective. I'm going to have access to their highly sensitive trade secrets and business practices, and they just want to make sure that I'm an okay guy. They want some assurance that I'm not going to sell what I learned to their competitors, and one indicator is that I haven't been convicted of any crimes or so far in debt that I'm willing to sell a kidney. I also know that some of the high-end personal defense and firearms instructors won't take you on as a student unless you have a carried concealed weapon permit. The reason is that that piece of paper is a government-certified document saying that you have a clean record. These instructors want to ensure that they are teaching their deadly skills to only law-abiding citizens and not gangbangers or other types of criminals. Your word that you're an okay guy is nice, but it is better to have an unbiased third party verified. So in a perfect world, when you meet with a school owner, you want to see three things on the wall behind him: a black belt certificate, a CPR and first aid certificate, and a cleared background check certificate. Now again, right now, I doubt you'll see anything but the black belt certification, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't ask for it. If every parent that walks through the door starts asking for them, the market will then shift to meet the demand, and that shift will make our martial arts schools a safer place. The last item I'll cover is how and when to stop your child's martial arts training. There are three major breaking points when people leave their martial arts schools. Now, I've seen this for many years, and it's the same across all styles of martial arts. Most people leave after their second or third belt, or about three belts before their black belt, or just after their black belt. People leave for many, many reasons. But generally, if it's after the second or third belt, it's because they feel they've learned enough, or that they're bored with the training, or it's more of a commitment than what they originally expected. Now, about three belts before your black belt is when things get really tough. Advancement slows down significantly, and the materials become far more complicated, and the instructor expectations rise. You need to be really committed to push through this phase. But then, you reach black belt. You won the game and got the trophy, right? Well, you think you're done and that you don't have anything else to learn, so you leave. But of course, a true martial artist will realize that that is just the beginning. A black belt only certifies that you have tested and proved that you have a basic understanding of the core curriculum. But that doesn't mean that you're a true martial artist or that you really have an understanding of the style. It just means that you've gone through all the basics. The most dangerous time for children is those first few belts. They're starting to learn how to block, punch, and kick effectively, and their self-confidence is growing. They start to think of themselves as the next Jet Li or Chuck Norris. They might even know more than the average kid on the playground. But what they don't have yet is a grasp of the discipline that goes along with the physical skills. Now, many kids, especially boys, will want to show off their skills, so they'll pick fights. And I see it all the time. I'm also ashamed to admit that even I did it when I got my first belt back in 1981. I got promoted over the weekend, and I picked a fight with a kid at lunch the next Monday at school. I come from a large family. Between my family and my wife's family, I have 16 nieces and nephews. Since some of them listen to this show, I'm not going to use their real names in the next story. There is nothing worse than embarrassing a teenager to an international audience. So, my nephew, we'll call him Bobby, had just started his Taekwondo lessons. A few months afterwards, my wife comes in quite upset and tells me that Bobby got into a fight at school and was suspended. I asked two questions. First, how badly did he hurt the other kid? And the second question was, did he just get promoted? She said he just kicked the other kid in the belly and knocked him down and he wasn't really hurt. Then she said he got his first belt last Saturday. And it was Tuesday now. Well, at least he made it one day longer than I did. The advice that I relayed to my sister-in-law was not to get too upset, that it was really common, and finally that she needed to call his instructor and have him sit down with Bobby and explain why it was not appropriate to do what he did. In almost all cases, these are isolated incidents, meaning that it only happens once and never again. If it does happen again, then there's a problem. But generally, once it's out of their systems, they grow a little more and move on, and it just really doesn't happen. That is true, of course, as long as they continue their martial arts training. And honestly, this really isn't limited to kids. I've also seen it happen with adults. The key point here is don't let your child quit after the first few belts. That is the most dangerous time. They know enough to get themselves into trouble, but not enough to get themselves out. And they have not developed the self-discipline to control their new skills. So if the instructor isn't working out, move to a new school. Just don't walk away from the training entirely. So here's the summary for this week's discussion of selecting a martial arts school for your child. The martial arts style is not critical in your selection of a school. The most important element is the instructor. Does the instructor connect with your child? Does your child respond well to the instructor? Use the free trial lessons. This will give you a very important preview of the temperament and style of the instructor and gauge how your child responds. You can start your child as soon as he or she is able to focus during class and physically able to perform the moves. And this is rarely younger than 4. Ask to review the children's curriculum for the school. Are the instructors CPR and first aid certified? Have the children's instructors successfully completed a criminal background check and fingerprinting? You probably won't get a yes to this answer, but ask anyway. And don't let your child quit after the first belt or two. Switch schools if you have to, but continue until a self-discipline is developed. Alrighty, that does it for this episode of Practical Defense. And don't forget to check out my monthly column, Raising Awareness, on TaekwondoTimes.com. If you have any tips you'd like to share with everyone, a comment on a show, or if you'd like to suggest a topic for an upcoming episode, write into podcast@alexaddix.com. I'd love to hear from you. Until next time, stay aware and stay safe. Well, that does it for this episode. Thank you for downloading and listening to the Practical Defense Podcast. For questions and commentary, send an email to podcast@alexhaddix.com. That's podcast@alexhaddix.com. And if you ever want to train with me, look me up on the web at alexhaddix.com. Until next time, stay aware and stay safe.